So it was the first day of religious school. At the end of the morning, the twins, Josh and Jen, they came running out of the car, out to the car. The parents were so excited that the twins just seemed to be alive. But when Josh and Jen climbed into the back seat, their parents said, "So, where'd you learn on the first day of Hebrew school, of Sunday school?" And Jen replied, "We learned the story of the slavery of Jews in Egypt and how God and Moses saved the people." Well, the twins' mother remembered the story. She said, "So, what did they teach you about God and the Exodus?" Well, then Josh started to recount the tale. "Long ago, the Jewish people lived in Egypt. There was a mean king, the Pharaoh, who put them into slavery. God got upset. God decided to punish the Egyptians. Next, God called to Moses. 'Moses, I want you to save the people. Tell the Israelis to send their aircraft carriers and the Navy out to sea. The Israeli planes should attack Egypt. Then the Israelis should send in their tanks and soldiers. I will protect the people. They'll surround where the Jews are. And then the Israeli Air Force will send in planes like eagle's wings. They'll rescue the Jewish slaves and bring them to freedom.' Moses listened, and Moses and God did everything that was commanded." The twins' mom paused for a moment and said, "Josh, that's unbelievable. When I was in Sunday school, they told me about a burning bush and God sending 10 plagues. Are you sure that's what they taught you?" And Josh replied, "Mom, if you think my story was hard to believe, you'd never believe what they taught us." Okay, I know y'all heard it before. The build-up was much better than the joke itself. jokes are based on truisms that we kind of mash up against each other. So here we have three. God is all-powerful. God does miracles. You wouldn't believe it that a child's voice says things that adults are just thinking. But I still feel connected to God. And in this week's Torah portion, Lech Lecha, we have a similar dilemma. God calls to Abraham, actually at that time Abram. He and Sarai, Sarah's name, were changed at the end of the parasha. And God says, "Go out from your land, the place of your birth, your father's house, to the land that I will show you. I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing." Abram departs with his wife Sarai, their nephew Lot, and all that they possessed. So connection with God is challenging to many in the Jewish community. You know, in American culture, we associate faith with the piety like this, or with the raised hand, one of personal devotion where God is going to intervene and shape our lives. Gabriel Moran, the author of a book called Faith Development, says, though, that we can't instruct people to believe in God. You can't say, "This is what you should believe." Instead, he talks about faith journeys. One person can share their experience with others and can say, "This is the path that I walked. And what's your path? And shall we go on a journey together?" So tonight I want to take you a little bit on my journey. So when I applied to rabbinic school, we didn't talk about God then. I grew up in the age where we talked about Israel, the Holocaust, and Jewish identity. You know, the great work of the Reform movement at that time was a book called Reform is a Verb by Leonard, who will become Label Fine. It's all about Jewish values clarification. And there were like 10 or 13 things, I think, and it said, to be a good Jew, you must. And then God was only one of those. But my last years at HGC, Rabbis Larry Kushner and Danny Syme began to talk about how we experience God in our lives. So my first deep experience came when I worked as a hospital chaplain for a year. I worked in the intensive care units in the ER, and I was there literally day to day with life and death. I still remember the first time that I sat with a family when their father passed away. The man had been in ICU and had crisis after crisis until the last time they just couldn't revive him. And as the only person who was in the social service fields with the ICU, my role then at that time and throughout the year was to be with the family when they were in the room and said goodbye. I can still picture Sarah in my mind. The room was darkened, the curtains to the outside were closed. She held the hand of her beloved Murray, her husband of 56 years. I remember the sadness. I remember the feeling of a greater presence and a quiet in the room. It was one I would have many times at that moment of greatest grief, a holding beyond. I remember praying with people. Yes, that was a foreign thing to me as a Jew. When people, the ministers who I was training with said, I prayed with the patient. But there was a family, patient wasn't Jewish. But the doctors said when she comes off the respirator that she'll probably pass away very shortly. We prayed together and we sat in the room, but she never passed away. Actually, she got better, she recovered, and she left the hospital. I had that experience several times when you thought that life was going to end and someone recovered. Was it God? Was it powerful emotion? Was it a spirit? I didn't define it, but it was shaping the deepest part of my being. When I returned to rabbinic school after a year as a chaplain, I wrote my thesis on Jewish ideas about God. I read Orthodox thinkers and their very passionate, unwavering faith, kind of universalism, God is the forces of nature of Mordecai Kaplan, and the experiential nature of faith of Eugene Borowitz. But it was a theology of the mind, but it wasn't God of the heart. So in my early years as a rabbi, I was struck by the movie Oh God. If you remember it way back when, with George Burns as God and John Denver as Jerry. And there's this amazing scene, cueing Jerry to come up to the Bima now. Good, we hadn't practiced that beforehand, that part. And so Jerry has heard God speak to him, but it was through a speaker and not in presence. And so Jerry's in the shower and God appears. I can do any face, any voice. And this is a little bit of that scene and that vision of God. It begins with Jerry.
Is that you?
In person.
You're not on the radio?
Have you got a radio in there?
No.
Bingo.
You're here in my bathroom?
Come and take a look.
I can't. I'm naked.
You don't think I know what you got? That was another little goof of mine. Shame. Not what you expected, eh? I can pick any look you understand. For somebody else, I would have looked different.
Why me?
Why not you?
You mean there's no special?
It's like a game of dice. Like the millionth customer who crosses over the bridge and gets to shake the hand of the governor.
People are always praying to you. Do you listen?
I can't help but hearing, but I don't always listen.
Then you don't care.
Of course I care. I care plenty. What can I do?
What can you do? You're God?
Only for the big picture. I don't get into the details.
And whatever happens to us?
Happens.
You don't control our lives?
I gave you a word, a world, and everything in it. It's up to you.
But we need help.
That's why I gave you each other. I love that film. I love the wisdom, especially, of that scene. That God is there, and God is caring about us. Miracles are too flashy. So there's that presence. And at the same time, God does not get directly involved. Through the years, that's what I held. But then I went on my first silent meditation retreat. It was a 4-day meditation retreat. I dove in the deep end. I had never done meditation before. We would do sitting meditation and walking. And on the final night, after 4 full days, the walk I chose was up on the top of the mountain where our retreat center was. It was a dark night. It was full of stars. And it was just this overwhelming sense of awe and of gentle love. Later, when I thought about it, I was reminded of the words of what's become one of my favorite psalms. Eternal God, our eternal God, how majestic is your name throughout the earth. You who have covered the heavens with your splendor, from the mouths of infants and sucklings, you have founded strength on account of your foes to put an end to enemy and avenger. When I behold the heavens, the work of your fingers, the moon and stars that you set in place, what is a human being that you are mindful of that human, a mortal that you take notice? You have made us little less than divine, and adorned us with glory and majesty. You've made the human to rule over your handiwork, weighing the world at each feet, sheep and oxen, all of them, and wild beasts too, birds of the heaven, fish of the sea, whatever travels the paths of the sea. Eternal God, how majestic is your name throughout the earth. As time has grown, I've moved a little beyond, oh God, to the feeling of, even in the very dark times, of this very powerful presence. And I think of the presence as a presence of love. But each of us responds to ideas about the divine in different ways. When I was teaching my course about God in the early years, there was one gentleman who was in his early 90s, and he came, and he sat in the back and said, you know, I don't really believe in God. I said, that's fine. Yeah, sometimes I don't either. Why don't we just talk for a little bit? That's God and George Burns. It is what it is. But I also think of it like a mobile, like that wonderful Cowdor mobile in the east wing of the National Gallery. With a mobile, if we can imagine a mobile here and each of us standing around, what each of us sees is true, and what each of us sees is different. And in order to know the totality of that mobile, we each need to share our little piece. But the mobile is constantly changing, as we're constantly changing throughout our lives. And so that image of love is what I return to. And when you think of the reading here, the poem, it doesn't speak of God. But if the love goes from a lowercase to an uppercase, it takes on a different meaning. We are loved by an unending love. We're embraced by arms that find us, even when we're hidden from ourselves. We're touched by fingers that soothe us, even when we're too proud for soothing. We're counseled by voices that guide us, even when we're too embittered to hear. We are loved by an unending love. We're supported by hands that uplift us, even in the midst of a fall. We're urged on by eyes that meet us, even when we're too weak for meeting. We are loved by an unending love. Embraced, touched, soothed, and counseled, ours are the arms, the fingers, the voices. Ours are the hands, the eyes, the smiles. We are loved by an unending love. Shabbat Shalom.